Perek Beis. Okay, Perek Beis Pasuk Zayin. Yesterday we spent a lot of time learning about Kriyas Yamsuf. Okay, now we're up to really Pasuk Test. The next Mamech Chazal is Pasuk Test. Pasuk Test says, "Va'ani hodisi lo Hashem choymas eish saviv ulechavoid eheyeh, and for honor eheyeh v'soicha." Okay, so Hashem says that La'aslov Hashem will be for Yerushalayim. He will be for Yerushalayim a wall of fire, and Hashem will reside in the city and give it honor. So the Chazal say, if you have over here on the article editions on page 726, if you ever pass by the shul, the young Israel of Midwood, please by all means come inside and take home a Sefer Trei Asar. You know where it is. It's in the shul. It's in the back portion on the wall. In the back of the wall, there's a whole collection of them. Please take home with you so you'll have an edition. It'll be a lot easier.
You're allowed to take it home?
Yes. You can take it home, yes. There's a whole collection of them. What's it for?
It doesn't belong to the shul. It belongs to us.
What is it for if not to learn from? Over here, it's collecting dust here. Oh. Please, if you ever pass by the shul, just come in and take one home. That's on page 726. Chazal v'ani eheyeh lo choymas esav v'lchovet omar.
There, cut it out.
Someone there does not like the shir. There's someone there that's not happy with the shir. He said, "Amar v'isig nafcha shalem yishalem hamavir es habe'eret." Says in the pasuk, one of the four forms of nizakin. Is in the first Mishnah, in the first Mishnah, Masechta Bava Kamma, Arba Avos Nezakin. There are four types of Nezakin. Shor Bar Mavet.
You mean Nezikin, don't you?
Nezikin. There are four types of Nezikin. Shor Bar Mavir Hever. What is Hever? Fire. Fire is one of the four forms of Nezek. And it says in the pasuk, "Shalem yishalem hamavir es habeira." The person who ignites the fire, he shall pay for the damages. Omar haKadosh Baruch Hu alay leshalem es habeira shehivarti, which I have burnt. Ani hitzesi esh b'tzirin shenemar vayatzes esh b'tzirin v'atoychal yisoydeha. Hashem says, I am the one who has burnt down the Beis HaMikdash. I am the one who has ignited, kindled the Beis HaMikdash. I am guilty.
Or lit.
Lit. I lit the Beis HaMikdash. I'm guilty of this pasuk of Hamavir Es HaBe'era, the one that kindles the fire. And therefore, it is incumbent upon me to Shalem Yishalem, to pay restoration to the Jewish people for the damage that I have caused. Thus, va'ani osid livnoi sabo eish nemar va'ani heyeloch haymas eish saviv ulchavod eyeh b'soicha. Fast in Gemara, teaching us the Gemara of Kama, the Kadosh Baruch Hu holds himself accountable and from the laws of Nezakin for the damage he has incurred to the Beis HaMikdash, and therefore he will, that is the reason, telling us a very, 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 very deep idea, the reason why the walls of Yerushalayim in the time of the Mashiach will be made from fire, will be a statement from HaKadosh Baruch Hu that I am the one who Hashem is, so to speak, saying I'm guilty. I have burnt down the Beis HaMikdash with fire, and it's my duty, Shalem Yishalem, Hamavir Es HaBe'era, in order to remind you and to remind myself, whatever that means, that it's my duty to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash because I am the one who burned down the Beis HaMikdash. The walls will be a permanent reminder. It will be from fire. It's a reminder of how it all started. I will be the wall of fire because I am the one who made the fire, who lit the fire to burn the Beis HaMikdash. Fascinating. And by the way, I very recently learned something which I wonder if it's really true. I just want to bring this out. It's a journal, I told you, a very interesting journal called Kankan. It's relatively new, 2-3 years. And they have these, you know, interesting articles. And there was an article there analyzing the Chorban Beis HaMikdash from the records of Josephus. Okay, Josephus wrote, Titus Harasha somehow respected, had respect, or I don't know, had something to do with Josephus. And he appointed him to be the official chronicler of what happened, what was taking place. In addition, and he wrote a very, very long a very detailed record of exactly what happened. In addition to writing a record for the Romans, he also wrote another book, a record for the Jews, a shorter book, I guess maybe in Hebrew. I don't remember every single detail. But there are contradictions between what he wrote for the Romans, or discrepancies as to our tradition. There's one thing that is very, very clear in the records of Josephus regarding the Chor Bayis Sheni. It's the Bayis Sheni. The Pasuk that we're discussing, L'chor, is referring to the Bayis Rish, not the Bayis Sheni. So it's not really an accurate discussion. And that is, in these records, Titus did not want to burn down the Beis HaMikdash. This is what it says there. Is it true or not? I don't know. Because it could very well, that's the question. The question was that Josephus was trying to rewrite history in order to endear himself, to find favor in the eyes of the secular powers, so that he should stay alive, he should be paid well, he should have a good life. There's a lot of suspicion as to the accuracy of everything that he put in writing, how true it was, or how slanted and tilted it was, in order to, again, like what goes on today, right. Fake
news. But in addition, there are also suspected changes and corruptions.
Later on,
they related later.
Now, in the records of Josephus, this is what it says. This is shocking to me, is that Titus desperately did not want to burn down the Beis HaMikdash. Titus wanted to conquer Yerushalayim, to exile the Jews, to perhaps murder all the Jews, to show them that he is in control, to perhaps to repopulate Yerushalayim with Romans. But he was very impressed with the magnificent structure of the Bayis Sheni. Chazal tell us, Mi sheloi ro'o binyan hurdis, loi ro'o binyan nohe biyomov. The Bayis Sheni was magnificent. It was something that was, it was a wonder. If Chazal make that statement, we have to appreciate that there was nothing like it. Those words say it all. Mi sheloi ro'a binyan hurdis, loi ro'a binyan nohe biyamav. This was considered to be the most beautiful, elegant, magnificent structure in the world. Titus' army were barbarians. They did not appreciate the finer things in life. They just didn't care. You come into a magnificent, they conquered Yerushalayim. It was a very difficult struggle for them to succeed in conquering Yerushalayim. There was a siege for many years, and they had absolutely no success. And the very, very last moment, the Kadosh Baruch Hu, we know from the Chazal, Hashem did not want to destroy the Beis HaMikdash. Hashem kept on giving Klal Yisrael more and more chances to prevent it from being destroyed. And then at the very end, Kadosh Baruch Hu said, enough is enough, I'm going to let them destroy it. And very quickly, they were able to succeed. But the soldiers of Titus were out of control. And they came in, and they lit these fire bands, which it's not really clear what these things are. They're extremely... they're very dangerous. There's some type of fuel which is extremely powerful. There was a lot of
flammable.
Flammable. There was a lot of gold, and the gold would melt. And the melting of the gold somehow caused it caused the wood to burn even stronger, and the stones even to melt. It's not exactly clear. But his people, Titus and his army were very different. Titus lived a pampered life. He didn't go into the battlefield. He didn't suffer he didn't have that hatred or that barbarism that his soldiers had. And when he gave them the go to destroy the Beis HaMikdash, and they were working and struggling, and finally now they broke through, they were out of control. And he entered into the Beis HaMikdash, he entered into the city, and every single point in the conquest, he kept on trying again and again and again to restrain his vicious, barbaric soldiers and army from gutting the Beis HaMikdash. He just wanted them to take control, preserve the beauty and the majesty of this structure, which will be a trophy for Rome. But his people were out of control. And he was in danger at various points in this moment. That is what it says clearly, clear as day, in the records of Josephus that were written exclusively for the Romans, where the soldiers, there's a very detailed account of every single event, every single moment of the conquest, of what happened. But at every single point in time, Titus Harusha was trying to restrain the people not to destroy it. Now that's very interesting, because you certainly do not get that impression from Divrei Chazal. From Divrei Chazal in the Kinois, we learn Titus Harusha comes in with his studded shoes, there are nails in the bottom of his shoes, and he comes into the Kodesh HaKodashim, he takes out his sword and he stabs the Paroiches, he brings in a Zoyna into the Kodesh HaKodashim, he's metamid lechem upon him, he takes the young men and he murders them. You certainly do not get the impression anywhere in Chazal that Titus was trying to hold back and prevent his soldiers from looting and completely obliterating the Beis HaMikdash. You don't see that anywhere. And yet, in the official records which we have today, it's very elaborate. Very elaborate how that's all he was trying to do. He was just trying to tell the people, stop, stop, stop. Don't destroy this gorgeous, majestic structure. Preserve the beauty of this building. Let this be a trophy for Rome.
Well, they took back enough trophies, didn't they? The ones they could carry.
They can carry, but still the building itself yeah. Ultimately would have been the ultimate. So
now, obviously it sounds like a whitewash.
So the question is, what's going on over here? So it would seem, I mean, we're very suspicious that this book was written for the Romans, and it seems that he had a very good relationship with Titus, probably because he needed him to stay alive and he wanted to be protected. It seems that Titus was under a lot of pressure from the Romans. Why did you destroy the Beis HaMikdash? You should have preserved this trophy for Rome.
The fake news media.
Titus couldn't care less. Titus, from Chazal, our impression is that
he was worried about being censored by Facebook.
He was a barbarian like everyone else. He couldn't care less. He wanted to destroy the Beis HaMikdash. But since the media turned on him, on Titus, Titus was getting bad press. What many of us would right away suspect is that Josephus tried to rewrite history in order to defend Titus for his lewd, barbarian behavior, and present him in a positive light in front of Rome, in front of the Senate, the Caesar, front of all the people back in Rome that they should not kill him and censor him for his behavior. And Josephus was trying to help him by lying, by rewriting history. Now, is what I'm saying correct? I have no idea. It certainly would seem like that, because the bottom line is, we trust, we have emunah pshuta in the words of Chazal. And if the entire Talmud and in the Kinos and our liturgy, you don't come across this idea anywhere that Tito is trying to hold back and not destroy the Beis HaMikdash. And then you read Josephus and he writes these things, how he was fighting with his soldiers and doing these outrageous things to prevent the Beis HaMikdash from burning down. Something doesn't make any sense. There's something which is very disturbing.
Again, this I'd like to interject in terms of what Rav David Katz, you know, and he's a historian, right? So what he claims here is based on the writings of Josephus. What I had mentioned to you was what he basically left out was Chazal. He didn't, you know, he took it from the total secular point of view. And what Titus was under pressure from is the Roman government was fighting wars on other fronts at the same time. He was being criticized by the Senate for losing so many Roman soldiers at the time. So he was trying to make deals with the Jews, just be good. And he sent out some of the towns in Eretz Yisrael, threw up their white flag, and they said, we don't want to fight, and they were left alone. But in Yerushalayim and in some other places, they refused to give in. And he was trying to make bargains not to have to go that far, because the loss of soldiers, they were complaining. He had lost 20,000 soldiers already, and the government was very upset with how much money he was spending fighting. So they were trying to get the Jews to calm down, just let the Roman government run, and they want to have their religion, have your religion, just be good boys. But the Jews did not want to accept it. That's what he says, because he was under pressure, because like we are now, we're fighting a war here, a war here, a war here.
Right. At nothing least
give
changed.
Up one of the fronts.
Okay, so but there is no question that there appears to be something missing, because the records of Josephus, you don't get any hint that there's any truth, or there's to what it says in these books. And there's a lot that we do not know. And why am I mentioning this? Because, and this is the Bayis Sheni. This is not the Bayis Rishon. The Medrash that we're discussing now is the Bayis Rishon. And the Bayis Rishon, we just called the Pasuk, Shalem Yishalem Hamavir Es Habeir. Let's make believe, for the sake of simplicity, that what happened in the Bayis Sheni is a parallel to what happened in the Bayis Rishon, if you can say such a thing. I don't know if that's valid to say that, that may be completely false. But let's just now make believe there's such a principle that there's a parallel of the Churban Bayis Sheni with the Churban Bayis Rishon. And let's now make believe that there is a mashahu, a crumb of truth in what it says in the book of Josephus that was written for the secular government. Then this Maimach Chazal comes to light in a much greater form, because the government was trying not to destroy the Beis HaMikdash. If Titus is the general, he is the ultimate authority, and the people, the army has to respect him because he can court-martial them. He can give a command, and a soldier is just would be executed without any hesitation. And Titus is telling the people, don't destroy the Beis HaMikdash. Don't burn it down. Don't throw a firebrand into the Kodesh HaKodashim. Don't ignite this magnificent building. And they say, no, we're not listening to you. Even if it'll cost us our life, we'll do what we want to do. Why would the soldiers disobey a direct order? What got into their minds? The answer is, Ribbono Shel Olam. Saying to Klal Yisrael, there can no longer be a Beis HaMikdash. You don't deserve it. You don't deserve to remain in Eretz Yisrael with the Beis HaMikdash. You don't deserve it. And therefore, the Beis Hamikdash has to be destroyed. And I have to show you that it's the Yad Hashem that the Beis
Hamikdash is. The Ka'as of Hashem. The Ka'as of Hashem. The
Ka'as of Hashem. The anger. And if there is some mashu of truth in this record, it makes a lot of sense. Is that the government, the government, Rome, was trying to preserve the Beis Hamikdash. It should not be destroyed. They're not necessarily going to let us worship, to serve in the Beis Hamikdash. They might exile us. But it's a very different world. It's a very different world if the Beis Hamikdash is still standing. Can you imagine today if the Beis Hamikdash was never destroyed and the structure is there? You know, the Arabs will have a much, much more difficult time denying that the Jews had lived here for 2,000 years. We'll have a much more difficult time denying that this is the land that was given to Avraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov, the Klal Yisrael. If today there would be a structure, an ancient structure with stones and bricks that preserve the remnants of the Beis HaMikdash. Look, what are you telling us that we don't belong here? How did the Beis HaMikdash get over here? They're trying everything they possibly can to remove any evidence that there was a Beis HaMikdash. And it's very easy for them to do so because there's nothing there, because everything is rubble. Everything has been destroyed. Could you imagine the structure had still been there? It would have been today a very different world. Our presence and
everything. Never mind the Arabs. How about the Christians?
Everyone would have a very difficult time. We would be in a much greater position had the Beis HaMikdash not been destroyed, even if we would have been exiled, even if we would not have been permitted to serve Hashem in the Beis HaMikdash. But Hashem said no. Hashem said the Beis HaMikdash has to be destroyed. It has to be leveled. And the way Hashem is showing that it is He, it is divine, that this Mikdash will be destroyed, is creating a situation where the authorities who are exiling the Jewish people themselves are trying everything that they can do to preserve it. It's just that they have some soldiers, some mercenaries who are just out of control, and they just take things into their own hands and they do outrageous things. That is all part of the divine plan to show Klal Yisrael that it is the Ribono Shel Olam. I am the one. It is I who sent the fire into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. And thus, when the Beis HaMikdash will be rebuilt, it is I'm going to bring back that same fire. And that fire is not going to be the fire that's going to consume the Beis HaMikdash, but instead it's going to be a fire of protection, a choyma of Eish, Soviv, the Beis HaMikdash. That is the difference. Okay, so that is, it's an interesting point. This is very, very controversial, what I just told you, because there's this real, real strong doubt if it's even true. And again, that's only when it comes to the Bayis Sheni. The Bayis Rishon, we don't really, they're Midrashim, they're Mamar Chazal. We have to really analyze what exactly happened, how it was destroyed, the Bayis Rishon. But there has to be some parallel. After all, they both of them were destroyed on the same day. It's not a coincidence. The Bayis Rishon, the Bayis Sheni were destroyed on Tes B'Av. So obviously there is some connection between the two.
Chazal called him
Titus HaRasha. Yeah, HaRasha. Well, there's no question it was a Russia in his focus on our religion, his will to rebel against Hashem. However, you have a magnificent building, you want to take that building and use that building for your own benefit. The Nazis, what did the Nazis do? They killed, they committed genocide, and what did they do with all the wealth of the Jewish people? They took it for themselves. They took their homes, they took their artwork, they took their possessions, all their gold and silver. So the Hayaluchud v'Hayaluchud, just because Titus was clearly a Russia and he rebelled against Hashem, he took his sword, his staff, the Pareiches, he brought a Zoyim to the Kodesh HaKadoshim, but it doesn't take away from the fact that he wanted our money. He didn't destroy the wealth. He wanted to take all of the wealth for himself. This Hamikdash was a magnificent structure. They could have used this for whatever they wanted to, whatever I think they wanted to. And he did not want to destroy. Now, that would have been for us a very great benefit if he did not destroy the Beis HaMikdash. But Hashem did not let that happen. And the way Hashem showed that it's his doing, it's not just an accident, is in this, at least according to the record, is that he tried very hard that it should not be destroyed. But his soldiers overcame him, and they did what they wanted to do. Let's go to the next Amar Chazal. The next Chazal is a Yerushalmi. Yerushalmi says, Rabbi Acha bar Yitzchak b'shem Rabbi Chuna Ruba Ditziparin. Okay, Rabbi Acha bar Yitzchak b'shem Rabbi Chuna Ruba Ditziparin. Yachid b'tishabav, he was, what does it mean? Ruba, I know what that means. Ruba Ditziparin. Name of a place? I'm not sure what that means. Yachid b'tishabav tzarech lahazkir me'en hamo'ed.
Dipori is certainly a place. Maybe he was the Rav of Tzipori.
Could be. The Rav means the rabbi. He was the rabbi of the city of Tzipporin. What does he say? He says makes the following statement. Yachid b'tisha ba'av tzarech lahaskir me'en ha'mo'ira. He has to say nachid. This is, it's going to take a siddur nachim. A yachid, when you daven the Shemona Esrei on tisha ba'av, we say this at mincha. There are different minhagim when you say nachim. There are some people that say nachim all three times. Ma'ariv, shachris, mincha. We don't do that. That's not our minhag. Our minhag is only to say nachim at mincha. But here is the source of saying nachim. Yachid, an individual, meaning when you daven your private Shemona Esrei, b'tisha ba'av tzarech lahaskir me'en hama'ora, you must mention in the davening a synopsis of what occurred on this day. Umahu oimer, what do you say? Racheim. Okay, this is not our nusach. Here is the Yerushalmi. Racheim Hashem Elokim b'rachamecha rabim uvechasadecha hane'emonim. May you have mercy with your abundant mercy and your kindness that is faithful. Aleinu, upon the Jewish people. V'al Yisrael anecha, upon us and upon the Jewish people. V'al Yerushalayim irecha. V'al Tzion mishkan kevodecha. V'al ho'ir, here comes the words that we are familiar with. V'al ho'ir, the city. Ho'avela, that is in mourning. Okay. Ha'harusa, that is demolished. Hashomema, that is desolate. Suna biyad zarim, that has been delivered, had been handed over to strangers. Harimusa, that has been trampled upon. Bekaf oritzim, in the hand of tyrants. And oritz means a tyrant, a wicked, powerful person who has no rachmanis. Vayivaluha.
It's the calf of the feet, not of the hands.
Okay, the soul of
Yerushalayim.
Step, they trampled upon the city of Yerushalayim. Vayivaluha, ligyonos, legions have devoured it, have swallowed up the city. Vayichaleluha, oivdei fisilim, and idol worshippers, idolaters have profaned. Ki liYisrael amecha nisata be'ahava lenachla. To the Jewish people, you have given this land, this makom, as an inheritance. Ulezera yishudun, to the seed of yishudun is another term for the Jewish people. You have given Yerusha hayrashta. You have bequeathed this land. Ki vo'esh hecherafta, you Hashem have destroyed the city with fire, over Aish, and with fire, Ata Osid Livnoi, so you will rebuild it. Ka'amor, and we cite this pasuk in the blessing, Va'ani Eheyelo Num Hashem, Choymas Aish Saviv Uluchavoid Eheyevesot, I will be for it honored B'soicha. Okay, so this is the Yerushalmi, this is not our Nusach. Let me get a siddur, give me one moment, let me go get a siddur to go through our. Okay, have a Seder Hillel so I can find it. Tisha B'Av, what we have over here. The Tisha B'Av, page 450. No, this is not the right thing. This is not what I'm looking for.
On a regular Siddur by Mincha there, no?
A regular Mincha.
A regular Mincha.
Yushalayim Mircha?
Yeah.
Don't see the regular. No.
In Shema, by Shema Kalenu.
I'm sorry, I was looking by Myra, that's why. Let's make more than this. Okay, here it is. Okay, fine. I got it. I'm sorry. Okay. In the Bracha of Yushalayim. Okay, we have the minhag that we actually change, we add into the nusach. We start the Yerushalayim Ircha Barachem Toshu V'Sishkan V'Sonichah Kasher Dibarta Uvnei Asa B'Kadu B'Yemein B'Nyan Elam V'Chitzei David Meheru L'Sonichah Tochen. So right, let me read it to you. If you have a sitter, that would be very good. You could follow along, I'll just read it to you. And let's compare it. Our nusach is not what it says in the Yerushalmi. How did our nusach change? I don't know. A lot of these questions are very common. As the Gemara, the Talmud presents a nusach, and yet when you open up the Siddur, there are changes, there are variations. How come we change from what it says in the Gemara? Good question. Some of those questions are very difficult to answer. But here the first difference is it does not say the word rachem. In our nusach, we exchange the word have mercy with the word nachem. Hashem, please grant comfort. That's a major change. That's a significant change. Nachem Hashem Elokeinu es aveli tzion v'es aveli Yerushalayim. We focus on the mourners that we did not do in the Nusach in the Gemara. Here we add in a word which is a little bit shocking. V'esoir ho'avela, that's the Gemara. V'hachareva, that's destroyed. And then we add in this word that's not in the Gemara. V'habezuya, the city that is disgraced. It's a very powerful word. The hashomema, and then
it appears to be substituted for haharusa in the Gemara's version.
The version of the Gemara in Yerushalmi it says haharusa that has been demolished, and here we exchange that for bizuya. Hoavela, we explain. Hoavela mibli vonecha. This all new. This is not what it says in the Gemara. Hoavela mibli vonecha. What is it? Why is it a mourner? Because its children are no longer here. V'hachareva, it's chodov, mi me'oinoi secha, from its abode, from its building, the Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaMikdash has been destroyed. V'habizuya, now this is very important, bizuya mi kevoida. And this mamish fits into the pasuk. This is really more elegant than what it says in the Gemara. It's bizuya because the honor is not here. What's the honor? Well, let's go to the pasuk. The pasuk is ulechavod eheyeh v'soicha. And in fact, we're going to actually quote this pasuk in the nusach. The word bazui stands in direct contrast to the kavod of Hashem that will one day be restored to the city. The kavod of Hashem is the Shekhinah, is Hashem's divine presence. Today, the divine presence is absent. Not totally absent, but relatively speaking to what it used to be, it is absent. That absent is defined with the term bozui, bizuya. Because when Hashem's presence is there, there is kavod. Hashem is called, Hashem's presence is honor. His absence is thus called bezuya. Then it says the hashoyneima desolate. Why is it desolate? Me'ein yoshev. There is no one living there. The yoshedes, it sits. The city. We're giving the city human characteristics. Yoshedes v'roisho chofui. Its head is covered. Ki isha akoro. Shelo yolado. Since when do we do that? Why are we eating this to the nusach? Okay, did not give birth. Vayeval uha ligyoinois. This comes right out of the Gemara, the Yerushalmi. It has been devoured, has been swallowed up.
No. You know what it is? It's comparing Yerushalayim to an Isha. And it just, and here it means violated.
Okay, violate, fine. The legions have devoured her.
Violated, like as if it were a woman. That's what I'm trying to say. It's continuing in that theme.
I don't think so.
Because we have a lot of that in Echa.
But the word vayivalua, that's not, it doesn't say in the
like,
it doesn't say in the Gemara anything about an Isha. This is something that's only unique to this, to our Nusach. In the Gemara, there's no mention comparing Yerushalayim as an Isha, that's Yesheves, the Rosh.
It certainly is here.
But when we go back to this particular expression of vayivalua ligyoinois, this is taken straight from the Gemara. And in the Gemara, it simply means the legionists, the legions of Rome, the legions of, you want to go back to the Bayis Rishon of Nebuchadnezzar, they have swallowed up the city.
Okay, I'm going to disagree with that interpretation.
Okay, by Yerushua Oivdei Zorim, and the Gentiles have taken possession, they have inherited the land. Vayotilu es amcha yishol lechorev, this is not in the Gemara, they have given over the Jewish people to the sword. They have committed genocide. Vayahargu v'zadoin chasidei elyoin. This also does not say in the Gemara. They have killed with wickedness, the pious ones.
Or premeditation.
Premeditated murder. Who the chasidei elyoin, the pious ones, the elevated, the great pious ones. Al Cain, therefore, Tzion b'mar tivket, Tzion cries with bitterness. V'Yerushalayim titin koila, libi al chalaleihem. My heart goes out in mourning over the dead. Mei'ai al chalaleihem. My innards churn and they moan over the same word, chalaleihem.
Can I just interject for a second? Michael, what you were saying by Evalua from Baal.
Be'ilah.
I know, but here there would have been an ayin before the lamed instead of after the lamed. The ayin after the lamed is from the word bala to swallow up. Vayiva'aluah would have been the word.
What you're saying, but what does that mean?
It's an expression.
It's an expression
that it was swallowed.
What does it actually mean?
After what happened to Yerushalayim, it became totally desolate. Me'ein Yeshvea.
Okay, but also, I'm saying the comparison is
totally swallowed.
Yerushalayim is compared to a woman, and it continues the theme there.
I know, okay. But then,
all right, so then we'll,
they would have said with an ayin before the lamed. I hear what you're saying, but at the same time, I just want to say maybe it could be that the difference in the Yerushalmi and our Nusach is that for Eretz Yisrael, they might have made a Nusach for Eretz Yisrael that would have been, that is the Rachem. And for Bavel and Chutz La'aretz, it became Nachem.
Very good.
Which we could say here, the difference between the two Nuschos.
We don't have a parallel. We don't have, there is no Talmud Bavli. There is nowhere in the Talmud Bavli where a Nusach.
I know, I'm saying it could be that this, ones that the Yerushalmi made it, Bavli adapted their Nusach for the Tefillah.
See that not everything in the Bavli, see, we have the Talmud Bavli. Not everything that was taught, that was done, was presented in the Talmud Bavli. Talmud Bavli is not, this is a very dangerous topic of discussion. Is there more? Is the Talmud Bavli 100% complete? Does it include every single Mesorah, every single teaching, everything that we need to know about Judaism?
You go to know that a lot of it was censored that we have returned now.
Let's assume we have restored everything that was censored because pretty much I think that most of us most of the opinions hold that we pretty much have restored or we know about anything that was censored. It's a general topic. You go to the Sima Shas, they'll tell you, you'll hear over and over in all of the articles and all of the speeches, is that the Talmud Bavli includes everything you need to know about Judaism. It's the Bible. Okay, obviously the Chumash is Chamish, the Chumash is Torah Shebichsav, but if you want to know how to live as an Orthodox Jew, every part of your life, there is nothing left out of the Talmud. It's all there. Is that really true? Maybe the Talmud Bavli is 99% of Judaism, of Orthodox Judaism, and for whatever reason, Chachamim, Ravina, Rashi, they did not include, whether it was due to circumstance, or maybe it was by design, or maybe it was an accident, they did not necessarily include in Talmud Bavli every single little thing.
The Chanukah story is an indication of that.
The Chanukah, well, we need to know, there is Chanukah, and Gemara Masechta Shabbos. The Gemara Masechta Shabbos discusses...
Oh, very little.
But enough of what we need to know. There's plenty of information. Okay, that's part of the question. Is there something missing? Is there more? And by the way, there's a whole discussion. There is a discussion about Talmud, about Talmud being written on Seder, on Seder Zeroim, Talmud Bavli, and Seder, and there are a few Mesechtas and Mesechta Kutchim. No, that's Yerushalmi. I'm going to get confused. There are Mesechtas that do not have Talmud. Does that mean the Talmud was never written on those Mesechtas? Or does that mean that for some reason it was written, but we don't have it, or it was not meant for us to see? These are very mysterious questions, and the assumption is, what I'm telling you is false. The assumption is the Talmud Bavli has everything, 100%. But not everyone agrees to that. And if you take the approach that Talmud Bavli doesn't have 100%, it's 99%, the things that are missing, you can find the parallel. What is missing would be in the Talmud Yerushalmi. The Talmud Yerushalmi presents a nusach for Me'ein HaMa'ora on Tisha B'Av. That's amazing. Nowhere in the Bavli is there a nusach. Nowhere. Nowhere in the Talmud Bavli is there anywhere a nusach telling us what to say on Tisha B'Av to be the Me'ein HaMa'ora. And obviously in our Sidurin, we'd have a nusach Ashkenaz, which to a very large degree is a product, the liturgy, a product of Bavel. We have a different nusach. It's very similar to what it says in the Yerushalmi, but there are significant differences. And start off, as Rabbi Kala said, about that Rachem versus Nachem. That's a very fundamental difference. Is it Rachem or Nachem? That's a very different emotion. And then we go through the whole nusach. We see differences. Where did this come from? Are we to say that there was no nusach in Bavel at all? And the people in Bavel, they took what it says in the Yerushalmi and they adapted it and they elaborated upon it? Or no? The Talmidei Chachamim in Bavel, they established firmly a nusach, and the nusach that we have in our Siddur is what the nusach was established. And for whatever reason, it was not printed in the Bavli. Maybe they felt that the Siddur, the fact that we have a Siddur and we actually say the nusach, that's enough. That you don't need to go write it in the Talmud. If you already have it in the Siddur, even though the Siddur wasn't really in print, the Siddur was no Siddur written in print, the Siddur was purely a Baal Peh, but the fact that it was shogor, it was fluent in the mouths of all of the people who would daven every year once a year, it was not necessary to put in print in the Talmud Bavli. Or maybe not. Maybe really there's only one nusach, the nusach of the Yerushalmi, and somehow over the generations, people have manipulated this nusach and have elaborated and made it to what we have it today. Okay, what's very important though for us is that we spend over here 2-3 days learning this pasuk, and we now quote the pasuk in the nusach. How often in the siddur?
By the way, there is a third nusach, which is nusach Roimi, which goes back to the people that came to Rome, which is not nusach Sfard or nusach Ashkenaz.
You have
nusach Eidus HaMizrach.
Okay, so okay, we have to see. We see where that nusach came from. Okay, these are just little ideas. What's important for us is the end of the bracha kiyato Hashem bo eish hitzato bo eish ato asil levneisab ka amur, and here we say a pasuk. This is very rare. The only time we quote pesukim is on Rosh Hashanah. How often do you quote a pasuk in the Shemona Esrei? Never. How often do you quote a pasuk in the Brachas Kriya Shema? To quote a pasuk, you don't do that. You don't quote pesukim ka amur v'nemar. You don't do this. And here, we're breaking with the rules. It's incredible. This is something which requires Hezber. Why did the Chazal, it's in Yerushalmi, did they actually quote a pasuk, Ka'amur? Since when do you ever quote a pasuk in the Nusach HaTzvila? You summarize pesukim. You take words from pesukim, but you don't actually say an idea. And then you say, Ka'amur, like it says in the pasuk, and we read the entire pasuk that we spend the last 2 days on. Va'ani, eheye lo nurum Hashem choymas eish saviv, ulechavoid eheye v'soicha. Baruch atu Hashem, menachem tzion uvone Yerushalayim. This is something that is very, very strange. On Rosh Hashanah, we have a special halacha. That's a very unique situation where we actually quote, we actually read 30 psukim. 10 psukim of shofars, 10 of malchios, zichronos and shofars. But besides Rosh Hashanah, it's not something that's common. Maybe you'll find the Yom Kippur, we do something, I don't remember exactly, but it's certainly not something that is common. We don't do it in the Aleph Yavo, we don't do it in Chanukah, Purim, we don't quote psukim in the middle of Shemona Esrei. Yet, when it comes to Nachem on Tisha B'Av, we're doing something very unique. I don't know the answer. It's something which bothers me. I don't know the answer. Now, this nusach, you should be aware, in some circles, which we'll call the fringe element of modern orthodoxy, this nusach has been challenged. And it became a very ugly, episode in Jewish history. After the establishment of the state of Israel, there are people who feel that this nusach should be changed. How could you possibly say about the Yerushalayim? You go to Yerushalayim today, it's a magnificent city with all of the bells and whistles of Western civilization, and there are bars, and there's nightclubs, and there are malls. How could you say that it's bezuya, and it's shoymema, and it's avela, Machane Yehuda? How could you say that Machane Yehuda, in the heart of Yerushalayim, is a mall right in the heart of Yerushalayim? They have every American shop. You know what I'm talking to? Right near the Waldorf, right across the street from the Waldorf, there's a mall. Go down a very long, it's an outdoor mall, and along the sides they have every American store. I don't know if they're still there after Corona. Maybe everyone went bankrupt.
Mamila.
All the American stores, who knows what happened?
Mamila Mall.
What's it called?
Mamila.
Mamila Mall, that's what it's called? Okay.
The fancy one, yeah.
Really fancy. They got it all. And how could you say? You have the Waldorf. And you have the Mamila Mall, and you have all of these things right in the heart of Yerushalayim. How could you say that Yerushalayim is bezuya Shemema, it's Chareva, it's Yosheves, V'Rosh HaChofu, K'ish HaKadosh Lo Yolada, V'Yavalu L'Gyonos, V'Yirashu Oivdei Zorim, V'Yatilu Es Amrit Shol L'Chorev. How can you say all these things? Right?
Well, it's really easy. Just look up on Har HaBayis and see what's there.
So no, but why focus on that? Why do you want to focus on that? So this...
Why not? Right. I mean, this is talking about the Beis HaMikdash in its central point.
I'm only talking about the Beis HaMikdash.
And Yerushalayim itself, but what's Yerushalayim without the Beis HaMikdash?
It's talking about the whole Yerushalayim. Nachem Avele Tzion, Yes Avele Yerushalayim.
That would be my answer, though.
So there were people, you know,
Blibaneha. The old city is Bidei Aravim, the Arab city there. The new Yerushalayim is not the same.
Why do you only focus on the sections of Yerushalayim that are in the hands of the Christians and the Muslims? Why not focus on the part of Yerushalayim that are in the hands of the Jews? It's been developed and established now more now than has been in the last 2,000 years. So why should we continue to say this ancient nusach that's 2,000 years old when the conditions on the ground have dramatically changed? It should be altered. It should be altered to reflect the beauty.
There was a trend to do it, but they didn't. The Rabbanut didn't allow.
I'm talking about
not allow it.
That trend. You don't.
The truth is. What they're focusing is taka the future Yerushalayim, which is the expanded version Perazai Stacer of Yerushalayim, but without the central point, which is the Beis HaMikdash, it is still Bezuya and Chareva. That's what we're saying.
You're preaching to the choir. Okay, 100%.
So let's hear you sing then. I mean, we're all in together on this.
I'm just bringing out that, you know, I hang out with some very modern people. I used to hang out a lot more, not as much anymore today, but I used to hang out in circles of really very very modern people on the boundary of modern orthodoxy, and I would hear this. People out there that have a very different perspective than the B'nai Torah. And this nusach really bothers them. It really disturbs them. And, you know, it's not for me to comment. Some of these people that I know, their children are in the army. Their children were Moser Nefesh for Eretz Yisrael, gave up their lives for Eretz Yisrael, to make Yerushalayim what it is today, that it should be safe and secure, and a spoiled brat like me can go from America to Eretz Yisrael and go to a hotel and walk around and do whatever I want. I never lifted up a finger or gave a dime to help the people in Yerushalayim survive or risk my life to fight in a war. So they resent that. These people, they gave their lives to create a Yerushalayim that we all can benefit from. And they, unfortunately, in their world, they're not heavily steeped in a Daf Gemara, in a spiritual focus on Yerushalayim. They're good, solid Jews to the core. They have a different background. They have a different focus. And when they read this nusach, it bothers them very much.
You know what?
Yeah.
A body without a heart is a cadaver.
Okay, but it's still alive. The body without...
No, it has no heart. It's a cadaver. It's dead.
I get it. Believe it, you're preaching to the choir. But I just want to present... I want to present the problem. It is a problem. It's not a problem for me, unfortunately, because... What did I do for Yerushalayim? What did I do? I did something for Yerushalayim. I didn't do anything. I'm in America. I'm a spoiled brat. I didn't do anything for Yerushalayim. But with people that are not Haredi, they're not religious, or even if they are religious, but they have a very different hashkafa, this nusach, it bothers them. And yet, they say it.
They still say it. The people that I hang out with, that it bothers them, I don't think, well, there's one person I know that made a change. Okay? I know one person, he couldn't bring himself to say this. I don't even know if he davens Maariv every night. But when it comes to Tisha B'Av, this he davens, and this he can't, he has to make, he told me he makes a change. I don't remember what he did. He made some small little change. Who are you to make changes? Excuse me here. Who are you to make changes? You don't understand, and you understand everything else it says. Everything else it says in the Nusach HaTfilah, you do understand. You understand everything? For those people who don't understand, you know, I feel your pain. I really do. But you don't have a right. We have to have emunah. If you're an Orthodox Jew has a duty to have emunah in the people that came before him and the Chachamim. The Chachamim knew. You can't say the Chachamim did not know that the day will come when Yerushalayim will be developed, will be successful, will be rebuilt, will be the financial center of the world. But the Beis HaMikdash will still not yet be rebuilt. And they established this should be the Nusach until that day comes, until that time comes when there will be a Beis HaMikdash and there will be a different caliber of leadership that will have the authority to change the Nusach.
I have an answer for that. We have the bracha of Yerushalayim Ircha.
Yeah.
And also in the Birkat HaMazon, it doesn't, Baruch Atah Hashem, Boneh Yerushalayim. La Tivneh Vela Be'avar Boneh. It's a Yerushalayim now is in the process of Beniyah.
It's being
Hashem Boneh Yerushalayim. It's true. Hashem Boneh Yerushalayim, but it's not finished. It's like a building. You cannot say erased it because they erased the tefillah because we live there. But we're still in process of binyan. Boneh Yerushalayim now. And that's true.
But I said, until the heart is not put in, it's still a cadaver.
Till the finish, it's still boneh.
Absolutely. But I don't have an answer.
I have to ask also, does this person, when he says v'lamalshinim, and he's so politically correct, does he say you v'hazeidim me'er, sa'aker, shaber, smager? That's very politically incorrect.
Only this you don't understand. Everything else, of course. But you know, I'm trying to bring out the point. Even though obviously chas v'shalom to erase even the kutzer shel yud, but it is an interesting point, and it is something which clearly the people who the chazal who established this nusach, they knew what they were doing. You can't tell me that the people who established this nusach only established it for a time when it was literally desolate. It can't be that the Chazal, who was so wise and clever, did not foresee the day would come when Yerushalayim would be what it is today. And yet, they deliberately went out of their way to say, after everything is said and done, after all of the success, the wealth, the security, and the beauty, the majesty of what is present today in the year, Tav Shin Pei Aleph in Yerushalayim, yet, we want to remind everyone in that generation that it's still called the ear that's Avela, Hachareva, Bizuya, Shemema, and Shemema. That's what they did. That's a very powerful statement. And you have to learn like that. You have to believe that Chazal 2,000 years ago, when they wrote this Nusach, they wrote this Nusach for us today, foreseeing the majesty of what we have today. And still they're telling us, don't forget, until you have that Beis HaMikdash, until Hashem Shechina returns, don't you dare forget on Tisha B'Av. Don't forget, the city is still called Avela, Chareva, Bizuya, and Shemema. That's a very powerful statement Chazal made. Chazal don't generally go so far. They're not extremists. Chazal are always very delicate. They're very careful. They're always being very delicate with us, not to push us. And here they gave us what we would call, they would call an extreme Musar Shmus. Don't forget what the real deal is. The real deal is the Hashroas Hashchina. And until that happens, you have to know where you are. Know what kind of world you're living in. All right, this concludes.
There are two masks on Har HaBayit. Two masks.
Absolutely. We know that, of course.
And that's Bzuya, the Chaliva, the Shomema.
100%.
Not I only think we're all saying that.
Everything else. That's what it is. But we live in a world today where we don't interact. That's the way that we live today. We live in a world where we're very weak people. We're always looking to highlight the good. If you're only going to focus on the horror, you'll close up shop in 1 minute. That's the way we live today. We live today, you have something good. Appreciate what you have. No, this. You can't look at the world like that. Otherwise, you'll go meshuga. So, we come to Tisha B'Av. No. All the good, who cares about the good? Who cares about that? Only focus on the ra. Only focus on the contamination, the impurity, the tsaros, and say these words. It's a very powerful statement. They knew what they were doing. You know, after in the year 1948, after the establishment of the State of Israel, there were people who didn't want to observe Tisha B'Av. It's a fact.
Also after 67.
It was a fact. They said, we're not fasting on Tisha B'Av. We have a state now, and it's over. It's over. Tisha B'Av is over. We're not observing Tisha B'Av anymore. That's a terrible Chil Hashem. Chazal saw that people can make this mistake. And they went and they said, don't make that mistake. Say these words. Appreciate what the real thing is and what's yet to come. And they went so far to break every single rule of tefillah to say, here, why don't you even say a pasuk? You think I'm making this up? You think over here we're just pulling something out of a hat? It's a pasuk. Ka'amor. Whenever you quote a pasuk, I'll quote you chapter and verse, a footnote in the Shemona Esrei itself. We're not making this up. This is the real deal. Don't get swept away with success in Eretz Yisrael. The real success comes with the Hashroas Hashchina and nothing less than that. All right, this concludes the section. Tomorrow we're going to go further.
Not only this, but one of the Nevi'im, but Beit Sheni, when they came to Israel, Ha'evkeh b'chodesh ha'chamishi b'chodesh zeh, we don't have to cry anymore. As what did the Navi's tell them? No. They also did the same thing, the same question.
That's right.
We don't have to cry.
The Nevi'im are putting us in the proper frame of mind. Absolutely. Okay, let's take a short break, and then we're going to talk about the sugya of Bezeas apecha toichal lechem. Everything we wanted to know about bread, and we're afraid to ask. Okay, I'll be back in 2 minutes.